had delays all morning, and we ended up canceling a total of 70 flights.
A computer problem causes headaches for Alaska Airlines travelers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska's dismal numbers for violence perpetrated against women.
About half of all adult women have experienced intimate partner violence at some point in their life.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
A plane crash last evening in the Wood-Tikchik State Park north of Dillingham appears to have claimed the life of the pilot. A Grumman-Wijian piloted by 71-year-old Newt Ball crashed during a landing on Tikchik Lake at around 5:15. Ball was reported the only person on board and is presumed to have died on impact. He was flying for the air taxi service Freshwater Adventures to pick up a hunter from a float trip. That hunter witnessed the crash and was able to notify authorities on Sunday evening. The hunter reported that the plane made several passes before attempting a landing, but a wing clipped the surface of the lake while touching down. The plane broke apart and sank almost immediately. The Alaska State Troopers in Dillingham began investigation and recovery efforts this afternoon after waiting for thick morning fog to clear. Newt Ball was born and raised in Dillingham. The Ball family has a long history of flying in Alaska, and Newt was no exception. He had his private pilot rating before graduating from high school and earned a commercial rating shortly thereafter. In a career that spanned more than five decades, Newt Ball flew air taxi and air cargo in Bristol Bay and around Alaska, and also flew for Continental Airlines. He retired as one of the most senior captains at Continental, with more than 30,000 air hours, all without accident, incident, or violation. The Grumman-Wijian that Ball was piloting in the accident was built in the 1940s and had been used by Freshwater Adventures for more than a decade. Since retiring from Continental, Ball lived in Kent, Washington, but had been spending summers in Dillingham flying for Freshwater Adventures, which is owned by his brother, Jerry Ball. He was planning to return home this week. Sunday's flight to Tikchik Lake was his last scheduled flight of the season. A survey shows high rates of violence against women in Alaska. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the random phone survey indicates there's a more serious problem than previously thought.
Crime statistics have long shown high rates of victimization of women in Alaska, but the University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center survey, now in its third year, is honing in on more accurate numbers. Center Director Andre Rose says the random phone survey shows far more women are victimized than indicated by law enforcement reports.
About half of all adult women have experienced intimate partner violence at some point in their life, and that was true in our statewide survey. It was true in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Dillingham, and in Kodiak as well. The rates of sexual violence were a little bit lower, but still, more than one out of every three adult women in Alaska has experienced sexual violence.
The UAA Justice Center phone survey is modeled after a national one sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control. The Alaska numbers will be compared to outside data, but Rose says the analysis isn't ready yet. He says the alarming Alaska statistics can be used immediately to work toward change.
To begin conversations about how do we address domestic violence and sexual violence here in our state. We also hope that it will impact policy and practice so that when people, for example, are making funding decisions, that they will consider the fact that half of adult women in Alaska have experienced intimate partner violence.
Governor Sean Parnell's administration, which has made addressing sexual assault and domestic violence a high priority, has provided some support for the victimization survey and used the results to guide decision-making. Rose says prevention is the best focus.
The lifetime numbers are extremely high, and they're going to take a lifetime to change. But if we can focus on our young people, and if we can give them the skills necessary to respect others and to prevent intimate partner violence and sexual violence, then I think we will be most successful in the long term.
The UAA Alaska Victimization Survey focused on gathering baseline statewide data in 2010 and shifted to community-specific input the last 2 years. Fairbanks, Anchorage, Bristol Bay, and Juneau were targeted in 2011. Kodiak, Sitka, and Bethel were the focus this year. The phone survey is conducted by RTI International, a nonprofit which also handles the nationwide survey for the CDC. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska Airlines suffered a computer glitch today that caused long lines in Seattle and Anchorage as travelers faced delays and canceled flights. According to the airline spokeswoman Marianne Lindsay, the network outage was caused by the airline's internet provider Sprint after a fiber network cable was cut in the Midwest. The Sprint connection affects the system the airline uses for reservations and check-in.
Our ability to check in passengers and take care of reservations was completely shut off from 7:30 a.m. here, Seattle time, till about noon. And the result was we had several delays in many airports. Our major airports were affected the worst. Anchorage, Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles had very long delays, up to 4 hours for some customers. We had delays all morning, and we ended up canceling a total of 70 flights.
The failure caused delays in all Alaska Airlines' 64 destinations, including airports in Alaska, Canada, and Mexico, and it affected all of Alaska Airlines' partner, Horizon, flights. Lindsay says affected travelers are being rebooked on Tuesday Alaska Airlines flights or on other airlines. The computer problem affected about 6,000 passengers. Lindsay says travelers with later flights tonight may not be affected, but she advises all Alaska Airlines travelers to check the airline's website for updates before heading to the airport. About 500 people are in Anchorage this week for the Alaska Travel Industry Association's convention and trade show. They'll hear from a variety of industry experts and advocates. ATIA President Ron Peck says this year's tour season was mixed, with more cruise passengers and fewer people driving the Alaska Highway. He says the good news is a larger percentage of international tourists.
We're very encouraged by the fact that Korean Airlines and Japan Airlines both operated charters again this year. But the other great news, because I think folks see market opportunity, is the fact that Iceland Air has announced twice weekly service starting in 2013.
Another airline, Condor, offers direct flights to and from Germany. The cruise passenger increase was about 6%. Similar growth is projected for next season, bringing the total up to about 1 million people. There is bad news as well. Peck says non-resident sport fishing license sales, once a third of 1 million, have trended downward. That means fewer people are coming to Alaska to fish. The nearly 25% drop over 6 years is tied to stricter halibut catch limits and poor runs. The tourism industry convention runs tomorrow through Thursday at Anchorage's Denaina Convention Center. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a call for solidarity from the new leader of the Alaska Native Sisterhood.
We need other people to stand with us. We need all races to come together. We all benefit when we all have civil rights.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
A couple of hundred people joined in a celebration of the 100-year anniversary of the Alaska Native Brotherhood in Sitka last week. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes was there and has the story.
The Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood are made up of member local camps that elect delegates who meet annually to elect grand officers and adopt resolutions. Founded in 1912, and as its members like to say, with the ANS as its backbone, the ANB set out to fight injustice, improve health and labor conditions, and to promote education. From the 1920s through the 1940s, ANB and ANS lawsuits and advocacy won Natives victories such as the right to vote, desegregation of territorial schools, and federal recognition of tribal status. The organization's mission hasn't changed, according to incoming ANB Grand President Bill Martin of Juneau. He says convention-goers adopted resolutions last week on everything from housing to education and subsistence. He says one cause that continues to be important is the well-being of future generations.
A lot of our children are going to school hungry. And that's one thing, but when they go to school hungry and they take tests, that's even worse. And so we're trying to work on ways that we can continue the program called Feed the Children or Feed the Minds. And that's one of the things, and it's not just for Native kids. But there are many kids in all the schools that are going through hungry.
Frida Westman of Juneau says the ANB and ANS achieved their victories through unity. And as the incoming ANS Grand President, she says she intends to strengthen ties with others.
Alaska Native people have been struggling for our civil rights for a long time. And the work is not over. And we need other people to stand with us. We need all races to come together. We need people of all sexual orientations. We need people of all socioeconomic backgrounds to come together. We all benefit when we all have civil rights.
The local ANB and ANS Sitka camps hosted the convention's 88 delegates, as well as many other visitors, and put together a celebration that included a parade, banquets, and, with the Sitka Historical Society, a display about the history of the organization. Local ANB Sitka Camp President Jerry Hope says planning began about a year and a half ago and intensified over the last 6 months. Hope says local camp members are elated that the hard work paid off.
You might think that after all the preparation and all the planning and then getting here, having the convention and to do all the work during convention, that everybody would be exhausted. But I don't see them exhausted. I see them exhilarated.
Next year's ANB and ANS convention will be held in Yakutat. Reporting from Sitka, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Last week, lawmakers were required to report quarterly financial statements to the Federal Elections Commission disclosing who their political action committees donated to. All three of Alaska's federal politicians have affiliated PACs. Joining us from Washington, D.C. to decipher what some of the donations mean is APRN's Peter Granitz. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Lori.
Peter, what exactly are we talking about here?
Senator Mark Begich has the Great Land PAC, and Senator Lise Murkowski has what's known as the Denali Leadership PAC, and Congressman Don Young has the Midnight Sun PAC. Now, it's less of a deal in the House, where you have to run every 2 years. Don Young is up for re-election, as he is every 2 years, whereas neither senator is up right now. So he's raised a little bit of money for his PAC, and he kind of gives all over the board, from some longstanding members to some newer people, but he's focused on his re-election.
Who have Senators Murkowski and Begich been donating to?
They have been donating to a lot of moderates, which is interesting. Senator Murkowski, her affiliated political action committee, has donated money to, of all people, Olympia Snow. Obviously, she announced her retirement earlier this year. This is a report for the entire year. This is not just the most recent quarter. She has donated to Senator Richard Lugar, who lost re-election. And she's donated $10,000 to Senator Scott Brown, who's hanging on in Massachusetts. You know, those are three really well-known moderate senators, moderate Republicans. You can tell that it looks like Senator Murkowski is trying to make sure that there's still a moderate voice in the Senate. The numbers are going to be smaller, that's for sure. The same for Senator Begich. He's supporting Senator John Tester in Montana. They see eye to eye on a lot of issues. He's supporting a candidate in North Dakota who's very much on the same page in terms of energy. So they're supporting a lot of people who aren't necessarily at the extreme ends of their party. They're more towards the middle, and I think that's reflects a lot of Alaska's point of view, and that's why they're doing it.
These aren't large contributions in the scope of how much money these Senate campaigns need to prevail. Does this matter, these donations that our senators are making?
It doesn't do a lot in terms of tipping the scale or the balance in a race, but it does a lot for personal relationships. It does a lot, and I really need to stress how important personal relationships are in the Senate. It's a small body. That's, you know, it's deliberative. It's slow. It really, things move on how people get along. You know, part of the gridlock right now is because there's, you know, the parties don't really get along too well. But this is a way to really, you know, bolster your relationships and your cred within your own caucus.
How will these donations from the senators' PACs affect Alaska?
Senator Begich is trying to get a subcommittee chairmanship. He's told me that he's interested in one on the Armed Services Committee or on the Commerce Committee. Both of those have really big effects in Alaska. Senator Murkowski, if the Republicans win, will be the chair of the Energy Committee. If the Republicans don't win control of the Senate, she'll maintain her spot. You look at a place like New Mexico, and New Mexico and Alaska have a long history on the Energy Committee with Ted Stevens, Pete Domenici, Jeff Bingaman, various people. You have former Representative Heather Wilson, who's a moderate Republican as well, running to replace Senator Jeff Bingaman, who has been Senator Murkowski's counterpart on the Energy Committee right now. She's donating money to her campaign because she'd like to see her on her committee. And the same goes for Senator Begich. He's talking about trying to incorporate more pro-drilling, pro-oil Democrats in the caucus. That's something that, you know, often gets drowned out by a lot of the environmental wing of the party. So he's supporting a woman named Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. She's a moderate, and he says that she's about as pro-oil as she can get, and that would have big effects in Alaska.
Well, thanks for helping us better understand how these political action committees do their work, Peter.
Thank you.
APRN's Peter Granitz talking with us from Washington, D.C. State elections officials are denying findings in a national report entitled Latino Voter Disenfranchisement in 2012. The write-up comes from a Washington, D.C. advocacy group, and it charges that Alaska is one of 23 states that make voting difficult for Hispanic citizens. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
The report, published by the Advancement Project, a Washington, D.C. nonprofit legal firm, points to Alaska as one of two dozen states that have legal barriers that disproportionately impact voter registration and participation by Latino citizens. Catherine Culleton Gonzalez is the director of the Advancement Project's Voter Protection Program and one of the report's authors. Culleton Gonzalez says Alaska policy hurts Latino voters in two specific areas: how the state purges its voter rolls and its requirement of proof of citizenship for voter registration. But what concerns Culleton Gonzalez most is a recent letter from Colorado officials to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. She says Alaska joined with Colorado in the letter to the DHS asking for access to federal immigration data to be used in purging state voter rolls.
And we found that Alaska has indicated that it would like to access the SAVE database in order to clean its voting rolls and to check the citizenship of people, when in fact people on the voting rolls tend to be naturalized citizens. And this is a method that has a discriminatory impact on Latinos and, frankly, other people of color, as we also indicated in the report.
SAVE refers to Homeland Security's Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements data. Culleton Gonzalez says mixing immigration data with voting requirements is by itself a deterrent to naturalized citizens' right to vote. A written statement from the office of Alaska Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell says, quote, Alaska is incorrectly placed on the list because neither the Lieutenant Governor's office nor anyone in our Division of Elections has requested data from the DHS's SAVE personnel, unquote. Treadwell has written to Advancement Project Director Judith Brown Dianis, asking her to remove Alaska from the Latino voting report because there is no basis for putting Alaska on its list of states with policies that could disenfranchise voters. Treadwell says in the letter to Brown Dianis that, quote, Alaska has consulted with U.S. Homeland Security's databases to check on the status of voters when citizenship is called into question. But we have taken no matching process to purge non-U.S. citizens at this time, nor is the database available to do so, unquote. The National Voter Registration Act requires states to clean up voter rolls to prevent voter fraud. Both Treadwell and Culleton Gonzalez say there have been few instances of non-citizens voting in Alaska, but Treadwell says if there is an allegation of a non-citizen voting, that allegation is sent to DHS for information. And he says Alaska supports having access to the SAVE database, but has not signed any agreement with DHS to do so. And that's what Culleton Gonzalez says is wrong. She says it is the policy of using immigration data that needs changing. Although there may not be a lot of Hispanic citizens voting in Alaska now, if the state's policy allows examination of the SAVE data, that could hurt future Hispanic American voters.
We are against the use of SAVE federal immigration data to check the voting rolls. We know that only citizens should vote, but we also know it's a problem that doesn't even exist. And also the immigration data is not accurate. It's not a voter database. It's an immigration database. And, you know, because of the reasons set forth in our report, can have a very discriminatory impact on the Latino community and other voters of color.
Culleton Gonzalez confirms that neither Treadwell nor Elections Division Director Gail Finumiai was contacted when the report was being written. She says no elections officials were contacted in any of the states on Advancement Project's list. All the data was gleaned from the 2010 census. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Thirty-six new handheld tasers have arrived at the Anchorage Police Department. Police spokesman Lieutenant Dave Parker says the new tasers will bolster the number of patrol officers carrying the weapons to about half. The tasers were ordered in July, shortly after two fatal officer-involved shootings. The new tasers can fire two shots in a row. The other 100 or so tasers used by officers now fire just one shot. Officials say studies show that when tasers are available to officers, there is a reduction in injury to officers and to suspects. In order for a taser to be used, there must be another officer present with a firearm. The tasers were paid for through a 2011 state appropriation. They cost $1,300 each. That's between two and three times the cost of the handguns the officers carry. A Fairbanks man will serve 60 years in prison after pleading guilty to second-degree murder in a shooting outside Ivory Jack's restaurant. 26-year-old Sean Jeffers was sentenced Friday in the shooting death of 20-year-old Brian Richardson. Richardson was shot once in the chest while sitting in a vehicle outside the restaurant in March 2010. Jeffers' co-defendant, David Palmer, has pleaded guilty to third-degree felony assault and is serving a two-year sentence. To some, the term living building may mean architecture for urban people with bank accounts to afford it. In the Aleutian Islands, the Regional Housing Authority is trying to bring living buildings to a population that is not that, but as KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports, that's easier said than done.
Last year, the Aleutian Housing Authority posed a challenge to architects. Design an affordable, net-zero energy home that can withstand the region's hostile climate while adhering to the world's strictest green building standards. More than 100 teams entered the contest. In trying to build the winning design, though, AHA discovered just how formidable a challenge it had posed.
Bottom line is we just ran into some elements with the design that were problematic.
That's AHA director Dan Duane. A team of architects from Spain designed Finesco, an aerodynamic house that channels wind like an airplane wing. The plan was to build the wind-powered house in Atka, a community with 60 permanent residents. But it turns out that's not going to happen. Duane says Finesco looked great on paper, but when it came to drafting construction plans, the problems piled up. So AHA went back to the drawing board and developed a patchwork house that combines favorite elements from the contest submissions with a net zero house design that's been tested in Fairbanks.
We were looking at that and talking about what we need, and it just seemed to be a design that, you know, fit our purposes very well.
The result is a three-bedroom octagonal house with wood siding and a traditional roof line. It doesn't scream cutting-edge architecture, but Duane hopes it will be revolutionary.
It's very risky, but it's worth investing in. You know, we can't get to where we need to be by just doing the same thing over and over. You know, and the only way to get from point A to point wherever we're headed is to take a little risk, put in a little money, do the best we can do, and see what happens.
So that's what he's doing. The Aleutian Housing Authority is going to start building the house in Sand Point next summer. Duane says starting in a community with regular barge service will give AHA the opportunity to test the feasibility of the project before moving out to the region's more remote communities. Arlene Gunderson is a tribal administrator in Sand Point for one of the groups the Housing Authority represents.
Building it is going to cost a little bit more than the traditional home that we've been building out there, but we're looking at trying to save the cost to the homeowner in the long run.
In hard numbers, the house is expected to cost between $300,000 and $400,000, but with the possibility of saving thousands of dollars each year in utilities. And that's what it's all about for Duane. Green architecture isn't a means of saving the planet. It's about saving money for rural Alaskans.
If they can't afford to live there, they're going to leave. And if they're going to afford to live there, they've got to be able to pay the bills, particularly the energy bills.
In that sense, the project is a test run for the future of green building. As fuel costs rise elsewhere in the country, energy-saving construction may start to look more attractive. And if Duane can prove that it's cost-effective to construct living buildings in the country's most remote, weather-beaten area, then it can be done anywhere. In Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ellen Lockyer and Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Jacqueline Estes in Sitka, and Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Aldrin. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Breastfeeding leads to healthy babies and healthier mothers. Women who breastfeed are less likely to get breast or ovarian cancer, and babies get fewer ear infections, score higher on IQ tests, and are less likely to be obese as adults. The road to lifelong health begins with breastfeeding. Call 907-465-3100 if you have questions about breastfeeding. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services WIC program, an equal opportunity employer. October is Energy Awareness Month, and the Alaska Energy Authority, along with its partners, say the average homeowner saves $1,200 annually after an energy audit. Learn how to be energy smart. Visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge would create a second link between the Matsu and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.